I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This week on the podcast, there are some huge changes for the Eurovision Song Contest. We chat to another one of the class of 2024, and we begin our journey to Malmö.
It's time for the Euro trip.
The Euro trip, when I read that, I was immediately thinking of the movie. Do you know the movie?
Hi, I'm Leanne.
Hello, Leanne. Leanne, are you a Eurotrip podcast listener?
I am, yes. I should say, I met some Eurotrip fans here. I was chatting with people outside the entrance. And they said, oh, are you Bella Kvist? And I said, yeah. I know you're from the Eurotrip.
What did you have for breakfast?
It was last night. I did not have a kebab for breakfast.
Queen Laureen, Eurovision winner. Did you ever think you would be back here again?
I get goosebumps. No way.
Martin Ostadar, Executive Supervisor at the Eurovision Song Contest. Welcome to the Eurotrip.
Thank you very much. Welcome back, I think it is, right?
Hello and welcome to the Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast with me, James.
Me, Rob.
And this week, it's safe to say there is plenty to talk about, including some big changes for Eurovision this year.
Yeah, when the EBU and when Eurovision just dropped press releases into your inbox, and then you have to start scrolling to find out what the details really are. We've got changes, haven't we, to the voting window, so you can vote from the start of the show. It's like 2010, 2011 all over again. The rest of the world voting period has changed. They can now vote 24 hours before the live shows. And a big change, the Big Five and the hosts are now performing, but of course not competing, in the semi-finals, James.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest of the changes you mentioned there. That last one is probably the biggest one, and the biggest one we'll see on screen and have a biggest impact. So we will be chatting to Ben Robertson from ESC Insight and the Bet Eurovision podcast to figure out what all this actually means for viewers at home.
And James, I can't quite get my head around the fact that Eurovision is merely a few weeks away now. Head of delegations meeting this week, which means that Eurovision's just around the corner, which of course means it is time for the March to Malmö. It starts this week.
It certainly does. For the next few weeks, we'll be heading over to Malmö to chat to somebody who lives in the city to get to know this year's host city of Eurovision a little bit better.
If that isn't enough for you, we have another of the Eurovision class of 2024 for you. We're crossing to Moldova and we're chatting to Natalia Barbu, all about competing in Eurovision, of course, for the second time, 17 years after she last did so.
So we've got all that and more to come. You're listening on Acast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This is the Eurotrip.
So here we go then. Another week, another edition of the Eurotrip. And James, I feel like it is now the time of year where we are ready for another James Rowe, how many days is it until the grand final countdown?
Oh no, you've put me on the spot. You genuinely have. This isn't even a bit. I genuinely don't know the answer.
I deliberately didn't tell you that I wanted you to do this because I wanted this panic to come through on the episode.
Well, until the grand final, if you're listening on day of release, so Wednesday this week, it'll be, it's less than 60 days, so 59 days until the grand final, or 60 days until it's all over.
don't say that. So yeah, not long at all, which is, as we said at the start of the podcast, why it is time to strap in, put your comfy boots on for the march to Malmö. It kicks off this week. Long-time listeners will know this is something we've done every year to get to know this year's host city a little bit better. So in Rotterdam. I will say we did the Rotterdam road trip, James, but of course we did in fact do the road to Rotterdam, or did we do the Rotterdam road trip? Eurovision stole the title, basically.
It did. They had the one we wanted to do, so we did the other one. Whichever one sounds better, that's the one we did. Let's put it that way.
I think we did the Rotterdam road trip in 2021. In 2022, we did the trek to Turin. Last year, the leap to Liverpool. This year, we are marching to Malmö. So that comes up a little bit later on. James, safe to say, a difficult week in the Eurovision community, of which we will come to a little bit later on. Difficult for... Well, one main reason, which, again, we will discuss a bit later on. Probably the hardest week to be a Eurovision fan since we started the podcast, actually. I was thinking about this. We've done the podcast now for going on 4 years. We started the podcast after, of course, the 2020 contest had been cancelled. So probably the hardest week to be a Eurovision fan since we started the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a tricky one, hasn't it? Plenty going on in the news, not just in the Eurovision world, of course, but there's been a huge reaction to a certain big story, which we will get into a little bit later. But yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one for a lot of people to work out how to cover it and stuff like that. But generally, we want to try and keep everything as positive as possible. That's what Eurovision should all be about.
Absolutely. You have hit the nail on the head there. If you listen to us, I like to think you listen to the podcast because you want a little bit of joy in your life. You want to look forward to Eurovision and you want to fully get yourself in the mood for what's going to happen in May. So that's what we're going to do between now and the contest in, as James said, 59 days time if you're listening on the day of release.
Yes, indeed. Thanks to everyone who has been in touch with us over the last week as well, since we last joined you last Wednesday. I'm going to go to Stavros first, by the way, Rob, because remarkably, the Eurovision songs in the wild continue to come in. People are still hearing Eurovision songs out and about.
Do you want me to get the bed ready? Do I need the bed ready? The music?
No,
do we need the music?
No, I've only got one. I've only got one this week. So no, leave it there. But let me tell you about Stavros, because he sent us a message. I think he emailed us, hello@eurotrippodcast.com, saying, "Hello guys, I was on the plane watching the Swedish Netflix series, The Unlikely Murderer, about the murder of Swedish Prime Minister Olaf Palme. And in an episode set in 1982.
Sorry, I don't want to correct you, but I did recently listen to another podcast, not this one, about the assassination of said Swedish Prime Minister.
Ah.
And you pronounce his surname Palme.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Well, you'll know that it was an episode set in 1982 then. And in one of the scenes during a birthday party, the Swedish entry, Dag Efter Dag, was playing in the background. So there you go. Eurovision gets itself into a Netflix series nowadays.
It's quite a highbrow Eurovision song in the wild, that, isn't it? In a documentary series about an assassinated prime minister. That's not quite, I heard it in a kebab shop in Bergen or whatever it was we had last week.
What was it last week? Somebody had heard a Eurovision song blasting out of a McDonald's car park in Brentwood. It was something like that, wasn't it?
It was something like that, yeah. So not quite the same. But that is, of course, James, the joy of Eurovision songs in the wild. They happen where you're least expecting them.
Indeed, yes. Last week as well, we brought you a message from a listener I'm just trying to remember the name. Katie and Jacob had messaged about what they do after Eurovision. Post-Eurovision depression often takes over, doesn't it? The days and the weeks after the final. We've got a message from Michael, who this is really interesting, actually, because I'm sure you won't know Michael, but you'll know a lot of Michael's work. So Michael got in touch on Instagram and said, "My post-Eurovision depression go-to is that I am a big contributor to Eurovision Wikipedia."
Ah, hello, so Michael.
Yes, indeed. So he says a few years now, he's been diving deep into improving articles in the weeks and months after Eurovision, both for the present year and past contest, and also helps to shape the articles for future editions as well. In a way, he says it. He's found himself that it keeps the Eurovision fever going basically until the start of next year's contest.
Well, talking of Michaels, there is another Michael who has got back in touch, and I will bring you that a little bit later on. He's a Michael who we've heard from before on the podcast, and I will bring you what he has to say a little bit later on. But thank you to all of you who've been in touch over the last few days and weeks. If you do want to get in touch, you can do, of course. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Threads. We're on TikTok as well. And for exclusive stories, eurotrippodcast.com. And if you want to email us, you can. hello@eurotrippodcast.com.
Time for all the latest news then from the world of the Eurovision Song Contest. As we touched on a moment ago, two big stories from the last week or so, but plenty of songs have also been released.
Absolutely. It's always the same three that we have to wait for until the very, 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 very end. At the time that we're recording, we haven't actually heard the songs from Armenia and Azerbaijan, I don't think, have we? But I know that Georgia have released their song, but it's always the Caucasus who make us wait until the very end to release their songs and find out what they're up to at Eurovision.
They do, don't they? I feel like they always want to be the last one. It's like, who can hold a nerve the longest? But yeah, as you mentioned, Armenia, they've announced their artist, so it's Ladaniva. And then Azerbaijan is Fari, but as you say, we're still waiting for their songs. Georgia, Nutsa Butsaladze has released Firefighter at the start of the week as well. We then had our last two national finals on Saturday, of course, Melody Festival in Sweden. Marcus Martinez won there. All the reaction to that, of course, on Melfest Monday. And also in Portugal, the final of Festival de Canção, we had the winner there, which is Yolanda. Have I missed any? It's such a confusing week. Albania, Bessa, we spoke to her a couple of weeks ago. She's released her revamp, so the English language version of that song, Titan. And then in Greece as well, Marina Sati has released Zari, her song as well.
And also, James, quite interesting, and I bring this up because we talked about Switzerland's entry last week on the podcast, didn't we, with the brilliant Thea, of course, of Thea and Selena fame. Well, Nemo has announced who will be choreographing their Eurovision performance.
Mm.
And it'll be choreographed by Frederick Benker Ridman. And you may know their previous work. So he was the choreographer behind Heroes for Mons in 2015 and Cha-Cha-Cha last year in Liverpool.
Interesting. I didn't know that was the same person who did those two performances, actually. But clearly a good person to have on your team.
But we've already said it. Two big stories over the last 7 days. We will come to the second of which, all of the changes that we have heard about that are coming to the contest in Malmö. We'll talk about that with Ben Robertson in just a moment. But James, of course, we have to talk about this because we're a Eurovision podcast, and so we will. Israel will be competing in Malmö because we know that their song has now been approved. Their song Hurricane has been approved by the EBU to participate in the contest.
Yeah, as we said before, of course, we, just as much as you do, want Eurovision to be positive, upbeat and happy all of the time. But clearly, there are stories every now and again, aren't there, that come around, such as this one, that cause a huge amount of debate online and a lot of friction and divide, I guess.
And I think it's probably fair enough that we put our stalls out here as well, James. I'm going to say where I'm at with this. Feel free to do the same with you. I think we're both on the same page. We'd far rather Israel weren't at the Eurovision Song Contest. And we won't be interviewing their entry on the podcast. But we do, however, feel that it is only right to tell you what is happening with Israel and Eurovision. And if there is a new story, then we should tell you about it, because you're not children, you're adults, and you're listening to the podcast for a reason.
Yeah, I think we could probably have another full-length episode or another 10 full-length episodes to go into the story in a bit more detail, but just to try and summarise kind of what's been happening over the last few weeks. So Israel finally announced and released Eden Golan's song Hurricane over the weekend. There's been a lot of reports in Israeli media about that selection process over the last few weeks. Seemingly, the original song, which was called October Rain, had been rejected twice by the EBU, as had another song called Dancing Forever. Both were deemed too political. But then on Friday, the new song, Hurricane, was officially confirmed and then released on Sunday. And a short statement from the EBU confirmed that on Friday that a song had been accepted after careful scrutiny. So there wasn't much detail from the EBU, just basically confirming the fact that a song had been confirmed.
This is very, very difficult for us doing this podcast. It puts us in a really difficult position. We've already mentioned that a little bit. I mean, needless to say that all pales into significance with what is happening to actual people in the Middle East at the moment. But it does put us in a bit of a tricky position. So I hope you will kind of hold our hand through it all, because this is all a bit of a voyage of discovery for all of us, isn't it? And it's, as I said, not a position that we really want to be in.
And I think what's really important to say as well, that there are a lot of people like me and Rob who produce Eurovision content that you will look at, you will read, you will watch day after day, week after week. And a lot of people have to make these difficult decisions about what to do. And there has been a lot of negativity from other people and other fans online. And it puts a lot of other people, because of that, in difficult positions. And I did want to read out a tweet from Edward Afsilian, as well, if I may, because you might know his name. He was the writer, he was the script writer for Eurovision in 2013 and 2016, and he's back this year to write the script for Eurovision 2024. And he put a post out on social media to say that a lot of the online backlash that he'd seen over the last year or so almost made him decline the job offer to work on Eurovision this year. So it's not just fans and what you would class as normal fans online who see this kind of content online, but it is high profile people like that as well. So it's really important to really consider, what you're putting out there, and obviously people have different views and opinions on not just this story but plenty of others as well.
We all fell in love with Eurovision for a reason, didn't we? That reason is different for everybody. For me, and I can only speak for me, it's because Eurovision is fun, it is silly. You don't have to take yourself too seriously. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And it is a wonderful shared joy with friends. That is what we are going to bring you over the next few weeks. Like, that is my pledge, James. I'm sure you'd say the same thing. That is what we will do. So come and join us on the Eurotrip over the next few weeks for a bit of escapism, to chat about Eurovision and just to have some fun.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, as we say, I feel like I keep repeating myself, but Eurovision is meant to be about the joy that we all get from it. You know, there's hundreds of millions of people who will watch Eurovision and have done for what is it, over 60 years now, and there is a lot of joy to be had. So hopefully, despite some of the stories that are happening, we can all find some of that joy over the next few weeks, over the next 59 days, as we say, until the grand final, and share all that together.
100%. Now, that was really important to address. Shall we get on with talking about the Eurovision Song Contest? The Eurovision Song Contest that we all know and love.
Yes, on Monday, was the heads of delegation meeting. Long-time fans, I'm sure you will know what this is. Maybe if you're brand new to the world of Eurovision, you might not know. But this is effectively the first time before this year's contest that all of the competing broadcasters come together and the host broadcaster, SVT in Sweden, basically tells everybody else what they've got planned. So it's a huge, exciting moment. And in that meeting, they announced a whole load of big changes for this year.
So many changes. We ran through them at the very start of the episode, but they include a longer voting window for the people who are voting in the rest of the world. So that means that people can vote online for their favourites 24 hours before the start of the live shows. Of course, we also heard that the voting in the grand final will open for everybody else before any of the songs have performed. So just before that first song is performed, going back to something that we saw in 2010 and 2011 at the Eurovision Song Contest. That was a Swedish idea in the first place, I think. It's something we see in Melodifestivalen, isn't it, in Sweden. So interesting that SVT want to bring that in. And also, we've already addressed this, maybe the biggest change is that the finalists, so the big five and the hosts, are now going to be performing, not competing, but performing amongst the other nations in the semi-finals as well. So they'll be performing in the semi-final that they will also be voting in.
And I guess this is, they're kind of linked together in a way, aren't they? Because Martin Østerdahl, the executive supervisor of the Eurovision Song Contest, said that they can open the voting in the grand final before all the acts have performed, because you will have seen them all in the semi-finals. The big five in the host country will perform in the semis, but won't compete. So that, according to the EBU, they are all on a level playing field by the time they get to the grand final.
Now, when there are changes of this magnitude, there is somebody who we like to go to here on the podcast. He is Ben Robertson. You will have heard him many times here on the Eurotrip and also on Melfest Monday as well. He lives out in Sweden. He's based in Stockholm. He's a journalist who does some brilliant stuff for ESC Insight. And also, of course, he is part of the team behind the Bet Eurovision podcast. So had a chat with Ben. I wanted to get his thoughts on these changes. We have a bit of a chat about the odds as well and whether he agrees with the countries who are currently the favourites to win the Eurovision Song Contest in 2024. But I started by asking Ben, of all of the changes that we've just run through, which of those could have the biggest impact on the results that we see in May?
If pushed, and I am being pushed here, then I'm going to say it's the voting from the start of the show. It has the most possible significance on the scoring, at least directly. Hear me out on this one. So the voting as soon as the song starts, the grand final, you can vote as soon as song one goes on stage, basically. The theory behind that is it's going to allow more people to go and vote, and they can vote more actively. So they can see something on stage, they like it, and they vote for it. It's been done twice before at Eurovision, in 2010 and 2011. We've not seen any significant difference in those competitions of running order, bias, anything like that. However, viewing habits have changed. People are far more likely nowadays to have a second screen in their hand. We know as a part of this, the Eurovision app is going to be streamlined, so there's no more clapping function, because why would you clap when you can vote? What you do have is the element of performing during the semi-finals will help your hype. It will give you more momentum. The reason this is fairer for the big five in the host country to perform during the semi-finals live as a part of the show, but let's see how that works presentation-wise, it gives them an equal playing field and a footing to get social media likes, interest. It is straight down the viewers' throats to see those on the Tuesday and Thursday night, rather than having the full performances hidden on the YouTube channel. That could help generate momentum and could be a bigger indirect factor rather than direct factor. The rest of the world vote, I mean, it's only 1/38th of the public vote in itself, so it's quite a small amount. It helps with engagement, but the chance of that being different on the scoreboard to the live broadcast is quite different. It probably favours acts that have more bigger international fan bases, I suspect that one. But again, that's only a few points at the end of the day.
I enjoy that you've just gone through all of them. all of the changes that I just asked you to comment on, and you've done in one answer a little comment on all of them. So, I mean, that's why you're on the podcast.
But the problem here is that all of these changes, I think, at very most, are a few points of difference competitively, or they make absolutely no difference. I mean, I don't know about you, but the idea of voting as soon as a show has begun, that seems quite ludicrous.
One thing that I'm going to touch on here, which is on the artists performing in the semi-final, the artists from the Big Five. I did see somebody raise a point on social media earlier that because, as you mentioned, these entries are going to be mixed in amongst the other competing nations rather than these performances coming at the end of the semi-final, for example, is that, say, in semi-final one, where we will see Sweden, Germany and the United Kingdom performing live, will, for example, having Marcus and Martinez and Ollie Alexander now almost within that semi-final, will that take points away from, bizarrely, a similar entry? So you've got, for example, Luke Tech in Lithuania in the first semi-final. I know that you're always thinking, you're always analysing, Ben. Could something like that happen?
You know what? I have no idea. Because we have never, ever seen anything like this at all in the song contest. Junior Contest in 2014 had little interval laps with like four songs, little break, little dance troops and stuff like that. But never a fellow competing song that's not competing. This is completely unknown territory. Or on the flip side, do you get Marcus and Martinez fans tuning in on the Tuesday night and then seeing the Lithuanian song they can vote for and then giving that vote? We're in completely unknown territory here. My instinct is I don't think it makes much impact. But there are all these different conundrums that come from this that have never been tested.
Is there anything we can learn from the two contests you mentioned? So 2010, 2011, when we have seen the voting opened before the show, before the grand final previously. Is there anything we can learn from what happened in those 2 years that might be applicable now?
Not particularly, no. We had two winners of those contests that were drawn late in the running order. I've done some quick maths this afternoon on it. I think the 2010 contest felt quite strong running order bias. Like the songs later did much better. 2011 was kind of break even. You had songs like Lipstick and Popular that were drawn first half that kind of nudged that around a little bit. But no, there's not enough data for a start to really make those kind of judgments. Plus, I don't think you saw that much voting traffic. People were waiting till the end of the show. Now, there are arguments that can be different nowadays. There are many more people who are used to voting during the show, at least in this country of Sweden. But one aspect that's different, and at least it's what we're aware of right now, is that the voting system is going to be the same in terms of what the cost is going to be. It's very easy to vote during the show on an app where you can button bash and get 5 free votes for each act. If you have the Eurovision Song Contest system where each of those votes is going to cost you anything from, 15 cents or something in certain countries up to over 1 euro, I think 1.70 euro, I think Estonia was last year. You don't just throw away and do that on the fly. You have to make a considered choice about that, and that is what you do at the end of all the songs.
It's interesting what you mentioned there about the votes costing different amounts of money across Europe. It's something that doesn't often get discussed, Ben, but a vote for 1.70 euro for a vote in Estonia last year.
Yes, Estonia has very high televoting costs because they use part of the televoting money through Eurovision and the national final season to help fund their entry into Eurovision. It's part of their mechanism for doing it. I've got a 2,000-odd word piece on ESC Insight, of course, about Estonia's televote. And if I compare Estonia's televote to what fellow countries that would be like Estonia's voting bloc would be like, tend to find a very slight trend in the Estonian televote that they vote a little bit more conservatively because their votes are more precious and maybe it's an older demographic that are voting for them. So less of the like viral sensations do well in Estonia by a couple of points margin.
So only in an interview with you, Ben, that we could end up talking about the cost of televoting in Estonia, but I'm delighted that we have.
Well, would you pay €1.70 to vote? I don't know if I would.
I don't know if I would, and I do love Eurovision, Ben, so no, you do raise a very, very good point. Ben, one thing that we did see at the bottom of the article posted on Eurovision.tv was that among all these changes, there is another big change to come to the Eurovision Song Contest, and as yet to be announced change at the time that we're recording. Any ideas what that might be?
I mean, the honest answer is I have not got a clue at all. But the one thing we do know about SVT is that from the 2013 and 2016 editions of the Song Contest when they were previously hosting is that they do love a good tinker.
Ben, we can't get you on and not talk about the odds. Of course, people will know you as well as for your brilliant stuff on ESC Insight as the stuff that you do on the Bet Eurovision podcast. Ben, I'd love to get an idea from you about where we sit with the odds right now. I mean, at the time that we're talking, national final season is over. Who are the favourites to win Eurovision? And importantly, should they be the favourites to win Eurovision, in your opinion?
Well, we don't have the runaway favourites that we've had in recent years, where Ukraine was a very short favourite. Loreen was even shorter at this time last year. If I don't like using the Eurovision world winning 10%, but it's a great stat for talking to a podcast like this. You know, our favourite to win the Eurovision Song Contest has a winning chance of 16%, which means there's 84% chance of the other countries winning it. So there's nothing that is a dead cert at all by any means. Croatia leads the market right now, followed by Ukraine, Switzerland, and Italy. Those four are those that are up in the mix right now. There's a few that are in touching distance. Netherlands and Belgium come to mind there. So, not looking obvious, though, I have to say. We're in a state that's quite unusual. That there's, of course, as people say, this can be a winner, that can be a winner. There's very little certainty in the betting market right now. There is no obvious winner to this year's Eurovision Song Contest.
Ben, as ever, a huge thank you. You've left us with probably more questions than answers, but I'm very pleased that you have because you've left us feeling very excited about what might be to come. So thank you very much for joining us, as always, on the Eurotrip.
Thank you, guys. Take care. We'll see you in Malmo for an audience poll, won't we?
Oh, yeah. We'll see you there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to The Eurotrip,
the world's favourite Eurovision podcast.
Welcome back to The Eurotrip podcast. It's great to have you here. We'll be chatting to another one of the class of 2024 very shortly.
For the first time going to Moldova since I spoke to Natalia Gordienko in a hotel lobby in 2021.
Oh, wow. Have we not crossed to Moldova? You carry on, but I'm going to try and disprove that theory that we've not crossed to Moldova.
I think you're right. I think we had Sunstroke Project on since then, haven't we? You've spoken to the lads from Sunstroke Project.
About 12 months ago, yes, when they were in the national final. So there we go. Nice to disprove that theory immediately.
Doesn't take long, does it, to disprove a lot of the stuff that I say on the podcast. Thank you too. I promised you this earlier on. James, you brought us a message from a Michael. Well, mm-hmm. I have another Michael, a Michael that people may be familiar with if they're a long-time listener. It's our old pal Michael in New York. He's been back in touch.
Is he back in touch? Is he with us? Has he been listening?
Well, Michael says, so this is, by the way, everybody, Michael, who lives in New York, hence Michael in New York, who is a long-time listener, sometimes gets in touch. He says, "Hi, guys. Happy to say that I'm getting back into listening more after a few years of only vaguely paying attention." He does go on to say that he's had a lot going on, so that's fair enough, Michael. We'll give you that. He says, "I will hopefully actually make it to Malmö this year. Tickets in hand. Not 100% sure if I'll be around in time for the Malmö Hagen pre-party, but I've bought tickets for that based on your involvement. Hopefully see you there, Michael. Your coverage, as always, has been fantastic. Really love that you've continued to lean into the Melody Festival and coverage and get some amazing interviews." Anyway, he said he mainly wanted to get in touch to say hi again. He's still listening on his roof. If he remembers from the Twitter days, oh, we remember, Michael, don't worry. "I promised you a beer in Turin. I suspect you're now a bit busy for that, but perhaps I'll get to say hi in person at the pre-party or another venue." That beer in Turin is long overdue.
Long overdue. He mentioned he listened on his rooftop in New York, which is such an exotic place to listen to a Eurovision podcast. You listen from a more exotic place than a New York rooftop. We'd love to hear.
Yeah, we absolutely would. Where do you listen? Or the least showbiz, maybe, the better. Are you like James's grandma? And do you listen while you do the ironing?
Or are you like Rob, who sometimes, or at least did once in the past, when I had recorded an interview with a Eurovision artist from years gone by, listened to that interview before we recorded the podcast while having a bath?
I did listen while having a bath. I'm not sure who that was.
It was my chat with Dami Im. You listened to that while in the bath.
It was lovely. I'd recommend. Yeah, if you don't listen to the podcast in the bath, everyone, I'd recommend it.
But now, as we do at this time of year, every year, it's time for this.
So this is the March to Malmö. So every single week on the podcast between now and Eurovision week itself, we will be crossing live to the Swedish city that is hosting this year's Eurovision Song Contest. I say crossing live, it's a podcast, so it's a figure of speech, you know what I mean. It's not live, really. But anyway, we'll be finding out more about the host city. We'll be finding out about some of the stuff you can do. We'll be finding out about some of the stuff you can eat. And importantly, we will be getting a lesson in Swedish language. Although, James, of course, you don't need that because I understand that you are well into your Duolingo Sweden. Are you not?
I am, yes. I'm just opening up now to remind me how long the streak is. It is currently sat at 260 days.
So are you going to be conversing with every single person we come across on my behalf when we're in Sweden?
Yeah, I wouldn't even have to do this bit where you ask for some Swedish language lessons in this section because I won't need them. I obviously say that in jest because my 260 days have not proven too successful so far. But never mind, I still enjoy doing it.
Well, we've got a very, very, very fun word to come on this, the first edition of the March to Malmö. So look forward to that. Joining us this week is Emma Lofgren. She is back on the podcast. She joined us months and months and months and months ago when I think Malmö was announced as hosting the Eurovision Song Contest. She is a journalist. She is from The Local Sweden, a brilliant news outlet over there. So we thought we'd get her back on. So she joined me from a flat on the outskirts of the city. So the first question, obviously, James, was an important one. I asked her how the weather was, so you can hear that in a moment. But I also got her to reflect on some of the events that have been happening in the city earlier in the week, some stuff that you may have seen in the headlines about Eurovision and about some of those protests about Israel's participation as well. So we'll hear about that from Emma. But first off, as I say, here is that killer question. What's the weather doing, Emma?
Rumours have it that spring is going to appear at some point. But yeah, no, the weather is not great at the moment. Actually, they say that officially, according to the meteorological definition or something, spring arrived in Malmö a month ago, but I find it difficult to believe that. Like, I'm looking out my window right now, which is not in Malmö, but it's close to Malmö. And I can see some spring flowers out there, but they're looking very sad in the drizzle and wind and general greyness and temperatures of like 5 degrees. And like yesterday when I got in my car, I got this warning message saying risk of ice. I was like, no, it's March. I mean, that's it. It should be nice and warm in May, fingers crossed. So thanks for listening to my weather report.
Well, let's keep the weather report going a little bit longer, seeing as we're on the subject. So, yeah, you said that in May, is it usually a bit better? I mean, you'd hope it was a bit better than now.
It should be like proper summer in May, hopefully.
So, Emma, it's brilliant to have you on, as I said, the first guest on our March to Malmo series. And for our long-time listeners, they will know that this is something we do every year, where we attempt to get to know the host city of that year's Eurovision Song Contest that little bit better. So later on, I'm going to ask you for a Swedish word that you think would be useful, or to be honest with you, the least useful, the better, the more bizarre, whatever you want to do. So we'll get a Swedish word from you a little bit later on. But can we get a sense of the excitement in Malmo for Eurovision at the moment? Is there a general sense that obviously Eurovision is now coming up to sort of six-ish weeks away?
I mean, most of the excitement in Malmo so far has been like people trying to rent out their flats for as expensively as possible. There are a few ads that are sort of starting to appear around the city, and excitement is definitely building, like especially now that Sweden just held its own Melodi Festival and tryouts and picked our Eurovision artist. So that's Marcus and Martinus, who are Norwegian. So apologies to them and their very catchy tune, but I want to say it's very important that they don't win, because Norway will never let us forget it.
I bet you are fairly reflective of quite a lot of Swedish people, Emma, that actually you want Sweden to do well this year, but God forbid the Norwegians win it for you.
Exactly.
Emma, of course, you're in Malmö, and one of the things people will have seen on social media over the last few days would be that the, I don't know what to call it quite, the Eurovision Tower, the Eurovision Monument that I think has been sort of housed in the city ahead of Eurovision turning up in the city in May. That was vandalised, I think, yesterday. So at the time we're recording on Tuesday. I think this happened at the start of the week, seemingly vandalised by pro-Palestinian protesters protesting against Israel's participation in the contest. I don't know if you know any more about that, or can you give us a sense of what the mood is in Malmö about what's been going on?
Yeah, I don't know much more than that about that specific incident. But yeah, it was vandalised. Someone threw red paint on it and wrote pro-Palestinian slogans like, well, free Gaza. And it was actually reported just this morning that police in Malmö have already received 3 applications for demonstrations in connection with Eurovision, both for and against Israel. So the first one is an application to march through the city in protest against Israel's participation, where at least the organizer expects about 10,000 people to take part. I don't know if they're going to get that many or not. The other application is for a demonstration outside Malmö Arena, where the event will take place, where the organizer wants to play Israel's song and wave Israeli and Swedish flags. So that one is presumably in support of Israel. And the third one is for another demonstration outside Malmö Arena against the war in Gaza. And I should say that none of these demonstrations have been like formally approved by the police yet, so we don't know whether they're going to happen or not. There have been some calls for the city of Malmö to step in and ban Israel from participating, but honestly, that's not Malmö's decision. Malmö is just the host city. It's not the organizer. That's EBU. And I mean, they've approved Israel after the, I think they changed the song slightly to be less political. I think it might also be worth noting that Malmö has a kind of complicated relationship with its Jewish population. There have been numerous reports about Jews in Malmö facing anti-Semitism and not feeling comfortable wearing religious symbols in public. And the city of Malmö, as in like official council representatives, they have also, at least in the past, been accused of not doing enough to protect the Jewish community, although it is getting better in that regard. So there is a bit of history there also, which also might help explain why the city of Malmö might be reluctant to kind of get caught up in a conflict with Israel.
It's an incredibly complicated situation, Emma, and thank you for kind of explaining what's happening on the ground right now. And obviously it's a story that we'll keep in touch with as the contest gets closer, I'm sure, and when we're in Malmö for Eurovision in May. If we look then at why we do the March to Malmö, to get to know the host city that little bit better, I said we'll get a Swedish word from you in a moment, but is there anything that you can tell anyone who might be visiting the city that they should go and see? What should they go and visit? I'd love a, not necessarily a tourist attraction, you can pick what you want, a tourist attraction or just anything that is kind of your favourite thing to do in the city.
So, I mean, Malmö isn't a city like, you know, Paris, where you have to go and see the Eiffel Tower if you're there. Like, there's not this one sort of spectacular thing that you must do. I think to me, Malmö is more about just kind of hanging out, soaking up the vibe. It's a fun, laid-back kind of city. You could go for a bike ride, maybe down to Ribersborg Beach, which is just a few minutes away, and you can see Denmark from there and the Öresund Bridge, and you can go to Kallis, which is this kind of old school bathing pavilion, which stretches out into the Öresund Strait via this long wooden deck, and it's got a sauna where you can warm up after going for a swim, because the water will still be pretty cold that time of the year. And another thing is that, I mean, I suspect that if you're coming to Sweden from abroad, you might be interested in traditionally Swedish food. But that being said, Malmö's international food scene is amazing. There's something for everyone. I sound like a tourist ad now, but there's something for everyone, from fine dining to simple fast food. And especially one thing that Malmö is very known for is the falafel. So when you're heading home from the Eurovision final late at night, you should grab a very affordable falafel roll. And I know that Van Hem's falafel tends to be among the ones that get high reviews. So I guess my two recommendations are go for a swim and eat.
I like both of those. So Emma, should I bring my trunks? Or like you said, how cold is that water going to be?
I'm not going to go for a swim myself because I hate cold water. But a lot of people like it. And like I said, you can warm up in the sauna afterwards. And it's a very beautiful location.
Okay. Well, thank you for those recommendations. And then, of course, as we will be asking all of our guests to do over the next few weeks, we need a Swedish word to help prepare visitors to Malmö for their trip to Eurovision this year. So you have the honour of providing the first one of those on the March to Malmö this year. What have you got for us?
Okay. Well, then I'm maybe slightly embarrassed by what I picked, because I'm going to teach you a Malmö dialect word.
Okay, I'm excited.
Southern Swedes tend to be very direct and not suffer fools gladly, so there's a multitude of insults in the local dialect. But the one that will probably be the easiest for you to pronounce is fubik. So that's a kind of, think of the pronunciation like the first part of full and the first part of bickering, so fubik. And it's something that you would use to describe someone who does something stupid or annoying, like, I don't know, like queue jumping or whatever. So something sort of a minor annoyance rather than something big. It's not super offensive. I mean, it is a bit rude, but not super offensive. And Southern Swedes have a high threshold for being offended. But I'd probably still recommend against using it, because it's hard to get the tone right if you don't speak the language. But what you could do is mutter it under your breath instead, because that's what most Swedes tend to do.
Okay, so you would say that someone, would you say that someone is fubik, or you just say fubik? Yes. About someone?
Either would work. Yeah, you could say that somebody is a fubik, or you could just say, oh, fubik.
Oh, I love that a lot. So hold on, let me give it a go. So fubik?
Yeah, no, that's really good. Fubik.
Perfect. Well, I like, Emma, that you've given us a word that I can at least pronounce. So that is already a good start. And if it means that I'm insulting some people, maybe I'll throw James an insult every now and then and call him a fubik. That'll be absolutely fine.
You absolutely should. That was perfect pronunciation, by the way.
Oh, Emma, thank you so much. Emma, thank you for joining us. Thank you for giving us an insight into what's happening in Malmö. And I'm sure we will catch up in May, if not before.
I hope so.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway, thanks to Emma, first of all, but the biggest takeaway is the new word you've learned. Is that like the first Swedish word? Well, not the first Swedish word you've ever learned, I can't imagine, but I feel like you will want to use it quite often in Sweden, yeah. if not only just against me.
Well, you probably will be a bit of a fubik at various points throughout Eurovision week. Yeah, yeah. If you hear me or see me in Malmö and I end up calling you a fubik, it's probably safe to say that our interaction has not gone that well. But yeah, lovely word. So feel free to use that, everyone, when you're out in Sweden.
More of the March to Malmö next week. But shall we catch up with Natalia Babu from Moldova?
Yes, let's do that, shall we? She first represented Moldova at the contest way back in 2007, back in Helsinki, of course, and at the time bought Moldova one of their best ever results at the Eurovision Song Contest. Well, 17 years later, she is back. She is representing them again with her song In the Middle. And she has the honour of being Moldova's 20th entry into the Eurovision Song Contest, which is a very nice title for her. We caught up a few weeks ago, and it was brilliant to find out more about her and her song, and also to find out how much her kids, or how much her son at least, really, really enjoys the entry. So it's a big winner with the children, apparently, is Natalia's song. Although maybe her son's just being polite. I'm sure he's not. I quite like the song, to be honest with you, James. But anyway, we find out more from Natalia about what it's like being back in Eurovision as well, because safe to say, a lot has changed in the world of Eurovision over the last 17 years. So here's what happened when we caught up. Natalia Babu, welcome to the Eurotrip.
Thank you.
How are you? Since winning the right to represent Moldova once again, how have things been for you?
Amazing, actually. A lot of happiness, but in the same time, a lot of stress, you know. We have a lot of things to do to prepare, so it's kind of mixed feelings, you know.
How are things different this time from, of course, when you represented Moldova the previous time? So 17 years ago, how do things feel different now?
Don't say that. 17 years. Of course, it's different now, because in 2007 we didn't have a lot of social media and so much on internet like now. For me, it's like the first time, even but more responsibility for me, and more stress, like the good one, because I need to push up more and be better than 2007.
I mean, you did very well in 2007, of course. You came 10th. You're in the top 10. So you've set yourself a very high bar, Natalia.
Yes, it is a high bar for me. We'll see.
Absolutely. I mean, what do you remember about 2007? How much do you remember about the experience that you had in Helsinki?
Oh my God, it was so beautiful, and a lot of energy that can feel just in that place. You don't find this kind of mixed feelings, a lot of pressure, but in the same time, you are so full of energy, love, passion. You can't find this kind of feelings anywhere else. So, but this time I think is like a first time, you know, when you give birth after 10 years, like I gave to my daughter, it's like the first time, second time, like the first time. So I say it's like a first time, but better.
Is there something special about knowing that your family, of course, will be watching this time, your own family, you know, your kids and your husband, your family, whereas obviously last time you're obviously much younger. So just a whole different experience.
My son's, play the song all day. He loves the song, and I remarked the children love this song. I feel like my song is unique, you know. It's a little bit different from what I sang in 2007. It's a lot different from other song I've heard this year. It can be very good or not at all. I don't know.
And Natalia, of course, you are the 20th entry for Moldova at the Eurovision Song Contest this year, which is a really special landmark. I mean, Moldova have sent so many incredible songs over the years, including, of course, yours in 2007 and again this year. So what is it about Moldova and Eurovision? Because you always send something very unique and something very special.
I think we take it very seriously, like country. We have a lot of talented people, we really want to be special. And we are special. I think we are special. We are small but special. Beautiful people, beautiful soul, beautiful musicians, artists. So we come from a little small country, but in the same we need to show more It's like more pressure for us, but we do great.
So why now, Natalia? What was special about 2024 that meant that you wanted to return to Eurovision this year?
At the beginning, it was just a song. I wrote this song from my heart with a lot of love for my children, for my family. But in the same time, when we almost finished the song, a lot of people, my close people, said that this song sounds Eurovision. So I said, why not? It wasn't created specially for Eurovision contest. It was just a simple song from my heart. That's all. And step by step, we thought it's a good idea to go with this song at Eurovision contest.
How much are you looking forward to meeting the rest of the rest of the participants who are taking part in Eurovision this year and sharing the experience with them, like you did, of course, in 2007?
I've listened the songs for seventh, the first semi-final, because I'm interested.
you want to know what you're up against?
Yes. There are very interesting songs there and different, and this is good. But I repeat myself, I feel like my song is totally different from anything is there. I love Germany's song. I love Norway. It's like from another planet. That voice is beautiful. There are a lot of good singers, beautiful singers with the beautiful songs.
Natalia, thank you so much for chatting to us on the Eurotrip. It's been brilliant to talk to you, and good luck in Sweden.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, it's nice to hear from Natalia on the podcast this week. Of course, she's representing Moldova in Malmö. Hopefully, we'll be catching up with some more of the class of 2024 as well over the coming weeks.
Absolutely, we will. If there's anyone in particular you want us to get on the podcast, do let us know. If you want us to get your favourite on, then please do send us who they are. And I was going to say, send us who they are and how we can get in touch. Don't worry, we'll do that bit.
Yes, indeed. Let's quickly squeeze in the 1 second song before we wrap up. And before we do it, I want to read out this message from Mark, because Mark emailed us and said, hi there, Rob and James. I'm sure I'm not the only one who noticed that James did himself a disservice in last week's podcast. He said the score was 16-12 to him, but of course, he is 18-12 up after getting 4 points on top of his 14-12 lead. Sorry, Rob. Love the podcast from Mark.
You can shove your email, Mark. I was happy to let that one slide.
So, fine. Yes, I have a 6-point lead, but you have the chance to grab 4 more points for yourself by identifying this week's 1 second song.
Okay, I think you have, much like I was to you the other week, being quite generous. Or was it that you'd forgotten it was your 1 second song this week and had to pick it in quite a hasty fashion?
I had to pick it in a hasty fashion. You're looking for the song title, the artist, the year it competed in, the country it represented at Eurovision. Let's have it one more time.
I didn't actually play it for myself that time.
That's arrogance.
Well, especially arrogant given that I can't remember what the song's called.
So, what do you think it is? What have you got for me?
I think we are going back, if I'm not mistaken, to 2013, the last time the contest was, of course, in Malmö. And I think that is Moldova. And I think that is it Aliona Moon? And then this is the difficult bit, because I can almost remember the Moldovan language translation better than I can remember what the song was actually called that she performed at Eurovision, because they changed the translation to English, if I remember rightly. I don't know. The stars.
Is that all you've got?
Yes, that is all I've got.
I don't think they changed it to English. Unless you...
Oh, did they not? Oh no!
So
it's like,
go on.
It's like,
don't know why I'm giving it's you like, this, but never
no,
mind.
I'm still going to get it wrong. It's like "Oh Me" or something, but it's not that, is it?
Yeah, I'll give it to you. I don't know why I'm giving it to you, but I'm going to anyway.
Oh, that's kind.
Yes, well done. 4 points across the board. Let's have a listen.
Mm. Omie de pulsuri pierdute în mare, pierdute în noi. Pe gene omie de raze de soare, aducă nu va seca, credeam în visele mari, dar ai ales să dispari. Credeam că nu e trecut fiorul ce am avut, la un nou început.
You're going to make Mark email in again. Mark's going to take it. Mark's giving you 2 points. He's going to take a point off me for that.
So it was 18-12, but you somehow were allowed 4 points. So it's 18-16. That sounds about right. Although I did it in such a hasty fashion, by the way, picking that, I feel like I've done quite well with it because there's a few connections there. I think you guessed a couple of them. The fact that it was Moldova, we crossed to Moldova. It was Moldova song when it was last, Eurovision was last in Malmö, but also a nice little hidden one as well. Something that we didn't mention, but we probably should have done, was of course that Sweden have been drawn to open the grand final this year. When, Rob, was the last time one of the automatic qualifiers opened a grand final?
I should have an obvious answer here for you, shouldn't I?
Yeah, it was 2013. It was 2013.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Hold on. Which one? Hold on. It was, who did that?
This shouldn't be a test.
Goodness me. It wasn't Germany, was it? They never opened. Germany never opened. There's a one for your spreadsheet. When was the last time Germany opened the Eurovision Song Contest?
Anyway, stop waffling on. It was France.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Very good. Right. Oh, well. And also, Aliona Moon was going to be in the Moldovan selection this year, wasn't she? And then she withdrew.
Yes. Another one of my wondrous connections down.
Oh, well, thank you everyone for joining us for the Euro trip. Bit of a tricky one. We weren't quite sure how to reflect the news agenda, but we hope we did you justice, or did ourselves justice at least. So bear with us. But as we said, between now and Malmö, we will hope to bring you our little island of joy and escapism as we look forward to what is going to happen at Eurovision 2024.
Yes, indeed. We love to hear from you as well. We always say this. Get in touch with us online. We're at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can email us hello@eurotrippodcast.com, and you can read all of our exclusive stories over on eurotrippodcast.com. If you love what you hear as well and you'd love to say thanks and support us, you can do that over on buymeacoffee.com/Eurotrip Podcast. And as well, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review and rate us 5 stars. It really helps, and it helps other people join in and listen along to us here on the Eurotrip. But in the meantime, for me, James, it's goodbye.
You weren't sure of your own name then.
I wasn't. And
from me, Rob, it's goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.